Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
David Locke, he's the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. And you might have caught the end of that, David, but believe it or not, it was a compliment. All three of us are saying, if push came to shove, as Warrior fans, probably rather play Phoenix than Utah.
You know, that's interesting. I mean, you ran us out of the gym on the second game back from the All-Star break. We were terrible last time we played. So, and there are some uniquenesses to what you are without Wiseman that do not work to the Jazz' favor. So I'm trying to, you know, the only thing I would say is Mikal Bridges is the best defender of the two teams on the perimeter. And so he would guard Steph. We have the best defensive player in the world. And right. Steph used to shoot more rim shots than people were used to. But now when you're taking 17 or 21 threes a game, maybe Rudy wouldn't matter. So I don't know the answer on whether I'd rather play the Jazz or the Suns at this point. The Suns have been the healthiest team in the West, and that's why they are where they are. But they'll be healthy in the playoffs, too. So I don't know. You know, that shouldn't be something where you discredit them for that.
How much has the Jazz depth been a big factor and a big part of the story, especially in this weird pandemic year where games have been in different bunches?
You know, not a huge amount in the sense that up until just recently, we were probably the healthiest team in the league. Now we've suddenly been without Donovan and without Mike Conley at the same time for, I think, you know, six or seven games. I guess both of them out for six games and Donovan out for nine. This will be the 10th. But, and you know, all of a sudden that's a lot, I guess, because it's in a 72 game schedule. We're talking about 1/7 of the season, but up until that time, when Donovan gets hurt against the Rockets, we had been the healthiest team in the league. We had played our rotation, you know, really quite simply. We have a basic 8-9 man rotation, and then we have two different players who plug in when someone's hurt. So we were just kind of doing the same thing. It's why we had the number one seed and the number one record in the NBA. Now, what they've accomplished over the last nine games, you know, back-to-back losses to Minnesota is not ideal, though that team is playing at about a 500 or better level recently, is that they've kind of survived without Donovan and Mike. They've sort of figured out how to play, and that's because Bojan Bogdanovic has been remarkable, who is the Western Conference Player of the Week this week.
Dave, there's been so many injuries in the NBA. I was telling the guys, I feel like Donovan Mitchell is the one that's not getting a lot of run, and I want to ask you, when he does come back, how confident are you or nervous a little bit about their first round series? Is it, okay, Donovan's back, we're back to what we were, or is it going to take a little time?
Oh, man, it certainly should take some time. I'm not sure I'm totally buying the narrative that's being pushed right now, that we have more injuries than so many injuries. I actually haven't seen a single data point that says we have more injuries than we've ever had before. Certainly LeBron got hurt and Anthony Davis got hurt, and so that headlines it a great deal. But, you know, I'm not sure that I buy the – well, let me just say this. I haven't seen a data point that tells me that the narrative is true. I've seen a lot of people pontificating about it, but I haven't seen anything that actually proves it. And it seems to me that this should be something that's, you know, actually got data to it of whether or not we do have more injuries. In the case of the Jazz, specifically with Donovan, no, it's not great. I mean, we're likely going to finish the last 14 games of the season without him playing, and then you have to try to bring him back, and hopefully he doesn't have a setback. Now, the one really important part for the Jazz, if they can get the one seed, or the fact they virtually have clinched the one or two seed at this point, is if I'm understanding the playoffs correctly, which with the new playing game, I'm not sure any of us do, But the season ends on Sunday, midday, in this crazy thing they've now built where everyone's going to be playing basically at the same time. And then Tuesday, Wednesday is the first play-ins. Wednesday or Thursday, Friday is the next, and then Saturday is the first opening of playoffs. So I'm going to assume that anyone who had to play in a play-in game doesn't play till Sunday. That, are you with following me?
Yes.
So because you're not going to make a plan a back-to-back or even back quickly on a Thursday to Saturday, I would think. So my guess is that the Sunday is the first game for the Jets, so they'll have an entire week off, which would give Donovan yet another 7 days. So hopefully he'll be all right. But you're certainly right that, you know, assimilating a player into your system, and particularly one of the highest usage players in the league, is not an easy thing to do.
David Locke, he's the play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz on radio. Quite frankly, one of the best in the business. I want to ask you, first of all, tell me if you believe this to be true, and then I'm going to ask you why. It doesn't feel like Rudy Gobert is in the MVP conversation. And if it feels that way to you, too, my question is, why not?
Well, because he doesn't score enough. And the fact that you asked the question, I do appreciate. You know, I own a mansion on top of Gobert Island. It used to be a really, really, really lonely place. And it was hard because there were no grocery stores. There was not even a coffee shop. It's kind of like living in San Francisco during a pandemic. Like, you couldn't go anywhere. There was nothing to be done. Now, all of a sudden, people are crowding onto my island, and I just didn't buy enough real estate. Like, I was hoping that, you know, I was going to be able to get Silicon Valley real estate price for it, but I didn't do very well. I think Rudy's one of the top five most impactful players in the league. John Hollinger, former NBA exec, made the comment on the Hollinger and Duncan podcast. He thought he was the number two MVP candidate. I don't think he's having, and Matt, stop me when you're like about to fall asleep of boredom from this. No. I don't think he's having a good defensive season. I think he might be having one of the two or three greatest defensive seasons in the history of the game.
Wow.
And let me see if I can explain this to you. When the Jazz lost to the Warriors and the Rockets in those back-to-back playoffs, what had happened to them was that they had built these incredible defensive teams, and they're no matter how good the defense was, the offense couldn't catch up, right? So even if we slowed down, which we didn't, Steph and James Harden, our offense wasn't good enough, even if we slowed them down, to catch up to how good their offenses were. So the Jazz made five personnel changes in the offseason 2 years ago, and all of them, Mike Conley for Ricky Rubio, George Niang for Jay Crowder, Jordan Clarkson for Dante Exum, Bojan Bogdanovic for Derek Favors, all of them were offense to defensive moves. And so the Jazz went from a team that was 13th, 14th, 15th in the league offensively to now being third. What they've also done, though, is stayed as the number one defense in all of the NBA. But the fact is, without Rudy Gobert, they're terrible defensively. It's not like this is a defensive team across. Tell me one player on our roster who you would think of as an elite defensive player other than Rudy Gobert. And when Rudy Gobert is off the floor.
What about O'Neal?
He's okay. But Kent Bazemore might be like a better athlete, elite defender. We're not like careful about it.
Point made.
When Rudy Gobert was off the floor last year, so 3 years ago when Rudy Gobert was off the floor, defense was in the 90th percentile. It was a defensive team. Every player was defensive minded. All those guys I mentioned, they traded all of them, got offensive players. Last year when when Rudy was off the floor, the defense was in the 16th percentile. This year, when Rudy's off the floor, the defense is in the 26th percentile. When he's on the floor, it's in the 97th percentile.
Wow. Man.
When Rudy Gobert is the closest defender, players shoot 7 percentage points below the average of what they would shoot with those shots. When they're within 6 feet of the basket, players guarded by Rudy Gobert shoot 14 percentage points lower than league average. 14.
Man.
You watch tonight how many times someone drives to the basket and goes the other way. Just goes the other way. Sees Rudy, not worth it, goes the other way. Now, Jordan Poole will try it once because he's just young and dumb enough to try it because every night somebody tries it once. he'll drive on him and get his shot blocked, and then nobody else will try it against the rest of the night. But Wiggins and Rudy have a really cool thing going where, like, Wiggins has dunked on Rudy a few times and Rudy's blocked Wiggins a few times in, like, this kind of epic battle. So if they renew it tonight, that would be great because it would be super fun to see. But you watch tonight, it's not just that he affects every shot. It's not just that he's so long. It's that he alters every play. And so no one's taking shots, maybe other than the greatness of Steph, in spots on the floor that they're used to taking them, and they never get them in the same way that they're used to getting them because the whole arc of your possession is changed by Rudy's presence. The final note on this, and then I'll stop. Sorry, like I'm on my pulpit and pontificating, but I'm mad. I generally believe that he is one of the five most impactful players in the league. The Jazz are the only team in the NBA for the last 2 years to be in the top five of denying shots at the rim and denying threes.
Wow.
Man. The reason is they go over every single pick and roll. They trail over the top of every pick and roll. They play behind you, drive you inside the three-point line, right to Rudy, and then you can't get to the rim. And you take the most mid-range shots, which are not good shots. If you have not done the analytics on it recently, they're still bad shots in the NBA. And that's how they win. And that's what this team does.
It's a great breakdown there as far as defensively forcing those mid-ranges. Without vertical spacing and James Wiseman, the lob game can't even be a part of it with Rudy Gobert lurking at the rim. How much of this translates against a smaller team like the Warriors are going to throw out there with Rudy Gobert maybe being forced away from the rim into more pick and rolls?
So I'm really curious to watch what they do tonight. So if Rudy guards the pick and roll, the Jazz are fine. Rudy's the number one defensive player in the NBA defending the pick and roll by a large, large margin. What teams usually do is try to get Rudy not involved in the play at all. So the Clippers will go put Serge Ibaka in the corner and make Rudy guard the corner. Where it gets really dangerous is if you can actually have your big play in the high quadrant. Because now Rudy, that's actually a harder rotation. The corner's not that hard a rotation. He just kind of hovers and then he can get back over in time. But if, you know, Draymond is able to play from the top. I know he's just not, the knees must be wrong because he's just not shooting it right anymore. Or if there's some way you can get your five to shoot it from above, that gets a little tough. The Jazz have done some interesting things this year where if you have a non-shooter on the floor, they'll have Rudy guard the non-shooter so that he can play kind of a one-man zone in the middle. I don't know what you do about Steph, but if you're going to double Steph off the pick and roll because he's so incredible, and then Steph's going to give it to Draymond, and Draymond's going to be able to play 4-on-3 in the middle of the floor like the Warriors have so many times over the years. If there's any way that Rudy can be one of the three in the middle, then you might be all right. Like, if you kind of almost just double Steph and zone up a three-man zone in the bottom would be my one thought of what the Jazz might try to do tonight. I haven't talked to anyone on the coaching staff today, so I don't know too much and just revealed something, but that's my guess on the only way to deal with him, because I don't think you can – I mean, you can't defend Steph normally anymore, can you?
Not now.
Dave, that's what I was going to ask you, Dave. You know, we're trying to put into perspective what Curry's doing at age 33. You watched him grow throughout this league, his career. If I said he's playing the best basketball, Dave, of his career, how would you answer that?
So the only reason I would quibble with you on that is because if you go back a few years ago, I think he had the greatest offensive season in the history of the game, including like Wilt Chamberlain and anybody else who ever played the game.
Yeah.
He revolutionized the game. I have an offensive metric that I use to calculate value of players. And what he did in the 15-16 season, according to my metric, may have never, ever been equaled. The only player that was ever close was Adrian Gantley, played like 27 games in a season and averaged like 35 points before he got hurt, and just some kind of absurdity where he took, the golden era where everybody wishes basketball was like it used to be when he took 19 free throws a game instead of 19 threes.
Yeah.
So that 15-16 season, I think, is the greatest offensive season anyone's ever had. So I'm not sure that I think Steph's better than that right now, but what he's doing is awfully close, right? And the game is maybe equalized a little bit in the sense that other players are doing it too. He's incredible right now. The amount of threes he's taking is awesome. Everyone in the world knows what he's Jordan-esque in the sense that everyone knows what he's going to do and he can't stop it. Pretty amazing. It's otherworldly. Tim Roy gets to have a lot of fun with it every night. I don't know how I would possibly call it. How do you make one sound different than the other is a really hard task when his nights are so, you know, poetic. San Francisco, if you're into the ballet world, has got like two of the best ballet companies, and the best artist dancer in the world is Steph Curry. So he's just incredible out there. And I don't know what you do to guard him, but you have to commit everything to slowing him down. The numbers on the team are pretty dramatic. If his scoring is up, they win. If his scoring is down, they lose.
Yeah. Hey, David, thank you so much as always. Love talking hoops with you. And who knows, maybe we'll get to catch up with you once the playoffs start if the Warriors can hang in there.
It'll be fun. I'm going to sneak into the arena. I'm tired of calling road games from Salt Lake City, so I'm going to see what I can do to sneak into the arena for a 7-game series. You guys are lucky to have Tim Roy out there. He's one of the best.